भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमद्भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नामने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रसादने निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पश्चादी सुतारने श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्री गौरभक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे श्री कृष्ण भागवत कैंटो 8 चैप्टर 16 वर्स 16 ओके पराय विवासता साहम मग्ना व्यसना सागरे ऐश्वर्यम् श्रीर यसः स्थानम् हृतानि प्रबलायर् मम परार्विवासितासाहम् मग्ना व्यसन सागरे ऐश्वर्यम् श्रीयसस्थानम् कृतानि प्रबलैर्मम परविवासितासाहम् मग्ना व्यसन सागरे ऐश्वर्यम् श्रीयसस्थानम् कृतानि प्रबलैर्मम Translation, the demons are formidable. Powerful enemies have taken away our opulence, our beauty, our fame, and even our residence. Indeed, we have now been exiled and we are drowning in an ocean of trouble. O best of sages, best of all those who grant auspicious benedictions, please consider our situation and bestow upon my sons the benedictions by which they can regain what they have lost. Sukhdeva Goswami continued, when Kasyapa Muni was thus requested by Aditi, he slightly smiled. Alas, he said, how powerful is the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu, by which the entire world is bound by affection for children. Text 20. My dear Aditi, engage in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the master of everything, who can subdue everyone's enemies, and who sits within everyone's heart. Only that Supreme Person, Krishna or Vasudeva, can bestow all auspicious benedictions upon everyone, for he is a spiritual master of the universe. Purport with these words, Kasyapa Muni tried to pacify his wife. Aditi made her appeal to her material husband. Of course, that is nice, but actually a material relative cannot do anything good for anyone. If anything good can be done, it is done by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vasudev. Therefore, Kasyapa Muni advised his wife Aditi to begin worshipping Lord Vasudev, who is situated in everyone's heart. He is the friend of everyone and is known as Janardana because he can kill all enemies. There are three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And above material nature, transcendental to material nature, is another existence which is called Suddha Sattva. In the material world, the mode of goodness is considered the best, but because of material contamination, even the mode of goodness is sometimes overpowered by the modes of passion and ignorance. But when one transcends the competition between these modes and engages himself in devotional service, he rises above the three modes of material nature. In that transcendental position, one is situated in pure consciousness. Sattvam visuddha vasudeva subditam. Above material nature is the position called vasudeva, or freedom from material contamination. Only in that position can one perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. Thus the vasudeva condition fulfills a spiritual necessity. Vasudeva sarvam iti samahatma sudralabha. When one realizes Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he becomes most exalted. Paramatma, or Vasudeva, is situated in everyone's heart, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. The Lord says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted and who worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridesh arjuna tishtati. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna. Moktaram yagitapasam sarva loka maheshvaram sukhradam sarva bhutanam gyatvamam shantam ritsati. The sages, knowing me as the ultimate purpose of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attain peace from the pangs of material miseries. Whenever one is perplexed, let him take shelter of the lotus feet of Vasudeva Krishna, who will give the devotee intelligence to help him surpass all difficulties and return home back to Godhead. Kasipa Muni advised his wife to seek shelter at the lotus feet of Vasudeva Krishna, so that all her problems would be very easily solved. Thus, Kasipa Muni was an ideal spiritual master. He was not so foolish that he would present himself as an exalted personality as good as God. He was actually a bona fide guru because he advised his wife to seek shelter at the lotus feet of Vasudeva. One who trains his subordinate or disciple to worship Vasudeva is a truly bona fide spiritual master. The word Jagat Guru is very important in this regard. Kashyapa Muni did not falsely declare himself to be Jagat Guru, although he actually was Jagat Guru because he advocated the cause of Vasudeva. Actually, Vasudeva is Jagat Guru as clearly stated here, Vasudevam Jagat Gurum. One who teaches the instructions of Vasudeva, Bhagavad Gita, is as good as Vasudevam Jagat Gurum. But when one does not teach this instruction as it is and declares himself Jagat Guru, he simply cheats the public. Krishna is Jagat Guru, and one who teaches the instruction of Krishna as it is on behalf of Krishna may be accepted as Jagat Guru. One who manufactures his own theories cannot be accepted. He becomes Jagat Guru falsely. Translation, my dear Aditi, engage in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the master of everything, who can subdue everyone's enemies, and who sits within everyone's heart. Only that Supreme Person, Krishna or Vasudeva, can bestow all auspicious benedictions upon everyone, for he is the spiritual master of the universe. Aditi, the wife, asked Kasyapa, will you please save us from this condition where the demons have taken away all of our my son's opulence, etc. So you help out. And Kasyapa Muni replied, well, oh, this is all Maya. It's so attached to your sons, so attached to your children. Which is true from the exalted point of view, from the spiritual point of view. Nevertheless, there is a problem in that the devas are out of their kingdom and the demons are in control. So that is not a good position for the universe where adharma is prevalent. Here Kasyapa Muni gives another instruction. He says, first instruction is don't be attached to your children. obviously Kasyapa Muni also cannot bear the fact that the demons are in control. So therefore he says you worship Vishnu or Vasudeva or Krishna, a supreme person. That is Janardana Purusham Bhagavantam. You worship this person, Vasudeva Jagat Guru, the one who lives Sarva Bhuta Guha Vasam, one who lives within everyone, sits in everyone's heart. You worship this person, and then the problem will be solved. This is the final solution to everything. Though it may look rather indirect. Whenever everyone has a problem, we say chant Hare Krishna or worship Krishna. Some people may think that's just being escapist or avoiding the problem at hand, because we got so many problems in this world and we just tell them worship Krishna or chant Hare Krishna. So it's like a little bit of an excuse, maybe. However, we should understand that ultimately this is actually the final solution to all problems. We have all sorts of problems in this material world, and everybody has their particular problems, and there's no person without problems, and all the problems are a little different from everybody else's problem, and each person has a multitude of problems also, not one problem. So we can look for solutions for all these problems in the world. We can look for problems for all the, our solutions for all, cures for all the sicknesses in the world. There's so many types of sicknesses, and we can look for all the little cures for that. And everybody else has other problems, financial problems, and we can look for solutions there. And in a sense, we do have temporary solutions for all these things. We have medicines and things like that, and financial plans, etc., to help us out. But we have to understand these are all temporary solutions. Because even if we get cured of our disease, we will get sick again. Even if we get our financial problems solved, again we'll get another financial problem. If not in this lifetime, in next lifetime or next lifetime. So these are very temporary solutions to problems. We like it, of course, because we get a little peace after we get these temporary solutions. But we see that they are very ephemeral. Just as in curing a person, we can always cure a person by getting rid of the symptoms. But that does not really cure the person. Again, the symptoms will come again, and the problems will come again. We can, if you have a headache, we give you an aspirin, and it gets rid of the pain immediately. It does not get rid of the cause of the pain, though. No? It just hides the pain from you, so you don't feel the pain anymore. But again, the cause will come, and you'll get the headache again. So it doesn't cure the headache, it just gets rid of the pain, that's all it does. It doesn't get rid of the cause. So all of these little solutions we have in the material world for all of our problems are like that. They don't get rid of the cause. Some of them will get rid of the cause on a very superficial level, some a little deeper, some a little deeper. But nevertheless, there's always a deeper and deeper cause there. So this is analyzed in the scriptures. Everybody gets problem. Everybody gets pain. Everyone gets problem. So the origin, the first origin we can say is, of course not the immediate thing. Okay, I get a sickness. It's a bacteria like that. But behind that is it's karma. I have to suffer because I must get a reaction for a previous action I did. So this is one cause of suffering, or your sickness, or your loss of money, whatever. It's karma. Why do you suffer now because of anything? Because you caused suffering somewhere else to somebody else in the past. So now you must get the suffering. This, of course, is a little indirect for, philosophical or whatever for maturely minded people. It's not an immediate cause like the bacteria or the virus or whatever causes sickness. But ultimately, this is the moral cause. And that's very important. Because of the moral cause, you can have any immediate cause. It could be a bacteria, it could be a virus, it could be this, it could be that. But ultimately, it's because you caused some problem to somebody else. Now you're getting the problem back on yourself. So that is a cause. So therefore we can say the cause of our suffering is our actions. And what is the cause of the actions, though, if we go back and find that? Why do we act in this material world and cause suffering to others? Because we want to enjoy. If we don't get some enjoyment, we're not going to do anything. If we don't do something for our body or our mind, we're not going to do anything. Why would we just uselessly do activities which don't have any purpose at all? We do them because we have desire. A a desire for enjoyment. Therefore, we do activities, and therefore the activities lead to suffering. So we can take it back that far, and of course we can solve these problems on different levels. So we're getting the reaction now, that is the karma. We can try to stop the karma there by doing a counteractivity. That's like taking aspirin, so to speak. That is, we can do some prayaschittas and punyas and pujas and stuff, and we can get rid of the immediate effect. That does not get rid of our desire, however, but it gets rid of the effect of the action we did. So that's a very superficial means. And it's not really recommended as the ultimate cure. So better than that is to work on the desires, obviously, and to get rid of those particular desires that cause us to act. So that's the higher cause and a higher solution, if we can get rid of the desires. The problem is, though, that desires are unending. We get rid of one desire, we pop up with another desire. It is the nature of the living entity that he's always active, he's always looking for something, he's always doing something, he's a particular human being, he always wants to know something, he always wants to experience something. So we cannot stop that desire also. And we can stop one desire, then we get another desire. So we can get rid of one desire, but that's very difficult. Another one will pop up like that. So, of course, when we attempt to do that, we can to some degree be successful, and this by wiping out our desires completely. When we do that after a long period of time with much difficulty, then we get liberation, impersonal liberation. Wipe out all desire, finish. Then we enter Brahman. So it's possible, but it's very, very difficult to do. And it's a solution, but then again we see it's a temporary solution. Because you sit in the Brahman and then you get a little bored and you come back down and you start your desires again. So it's also a temporary solution to try to just wipe out the desires. So there's something behind that. This must be a higher cause of our problem in the material world. And sure enough, that's what scripture says. Behind this is ignorance. Avidya. That means behind the desires is this rejection of God and this idea that I should enjoy at any cost. And this gives rise to all sorts of desires in the material world. We reject the idea of God, presence of God as the enjoyer, and put ourselves as the enjoyer. And then we get all these desires coming out. So we have to get rid of that idea that I am the enjoyer. This is the ignorance we're in. And from that we get the idea I am the enjoyer, then we get I am the body, and then we start our activities in the material world. So we got to get rid of that also. I am the enjoyer. So we get rid of that completely when we realize that we are, that Krishna is the enjoyer, I'm not the enjoyer. And when we do that, we don't get rid of our activity, we don't get rid of our knowledge, but the center of enjoyment shifts from ourselves to Krishna. If we try to simply erase the enjoyment, we end up with the impersonal liberation, which is temporary. When we shift the center of enjoyment to Krishna, we still have the possibility of activity, knowledge, etc. And we also get our happiness, our bliss this way. That is ananda. So this is the final solution. To surrender oneself to the Supreme Lord. That is the root of all the problems in the material world. All the other things will be temporary. And we get the root cause, we get rid of the avidya by surrendering to the Lord. So that will solve all the problems. So that is what Kasyapa Muni is suggesting here to his wife Aditi. You simply have to worship the Supreme Lord. This will be the solution to everything. Your sons are suffering and demons are taking control. The solution for everybody, for you, is worship the Lord. And the solution for your sons and Indra is worship the Lord also. And of course, even for the demons, if they will listen, they should worship the Lord also. That's the solution for them. If they really want enjoyment, they should worship the Lord instead of trying to kick the, you know, devas out of their kingdom. So, of course, we could take this in a little bit of a material way. We'll worship the Lord so we can get our kingdom back. Worship the Lord so my sons are victorious in battle. This is how we can, you know, take it. But this is actually not the meaning. The solution to all problems of our happiness and suffering in this material world, for Aditi, she's grieving because her sons are out of their position. So how to get rid of that? You worship the Supreme Lord. Then we give up our attachment. But simultaneously, of course, when we worship the Lord is perfect, and He responds perfectly to all situations. So He also fulfills your desires at the same time as He allows your spiritual advancement. Just as in the case of Dhruva, he wanted material kingdom. Later on, he met the Lord, and then when he saw the Lord, then he realized his desires were useless. They were insignificant. The prospects of a kingdom and all the wonderful things in the kingdom were meaningless when he saw the beauty of the Supreme Lord. The beauty of the Supreme Lord was better than a whole kingdom and all the enjoyment he could get from that. Why the beauty of the Lord was so wonderful is because he got spiritual ananda from that. And therefore the bliss of the material world, anything that he could get in the material world, was useless. So then he thought, oh, I've attained the Lord, this is the most wonderful thing. And then the Lord said, well, I'll give you the kingdom anyway. Because you had a desire. I want to give this thing to you anyway. Because you had that desire, even if you don't have the desire now. You had the desire and you were worshipping for that purpose. Therefore, I'll give it to you anyway. Of course, the Lord sometimes, if it's unfavorable, He may not give something to a person also. He may take it away. But nevertheless, the Lord tries to fulfill all of your desires and whatever. So if someone is worshipping, they're in problem, and one is worshipping with pure devotion, not only to try to please the Lord, even though he's suffering so much. He simply surrenders to the Lord. The Lord also responds to that situation. He allows him to advance spiritually, but he will also solve his material problems without asking. Just as when Sudama, he was hounded by his wife so much that he decided he'd better go to Krishna and ask for something, because his wife was saying, you know, we're so poor and we don't have enough food and we can't feed the children. So, you know, Krishna's very rich and he's your friend, so you should go ask him. Ask him for something. And Sudama felt very embarrassed by this, because I can't ask my friend for, you know, anything like this. He's Supreme Lord also. I shouldn't ask him for anything, you know, because he's a friend. I don't ask friends for something. So he's a real devotee. And when he got to Krishna in Dwarka, he went there. Krishna welcomed him very nicely and sat him down and took care of him very nicely, very happy to see him. And Sudama didn't want to ask. He was very ashamed to ask for anything. He was so blissful in seeing Krishna, he didn't want to ask him for anything, because he was satisfied with Krishna. And he didn't care about his material body and things like that. He wasn't attached to his children and his wife that much, I guess. So therefore, he didn't want to ask for anything. So Krishna treated him very nicely, and then he was satisfied and he went home. But then Krishna also, when he got home, he noticed that there was a palace there, and there was so much food and opulence, and his wife was nicely dressed, and all of his problems were solved. So Krishna solved all of his problems, but he didn't ask for anything. So in practicing bhakti, therefore, we try to concentrate simply on serving the Lord without asking for anything. But nevertheless, the Lord does solve all the problems. So Aditi simply carries out this process of worship of the Lord. The whole chapter is about the Payo Vrata, milk fast, worship of the Lord, fasting, etc. For 1 month, I think it was, and worshiping Vishnu. So one simply worships the Supreme Lord, and then we leave everything up to the Lord. Whatever He wants, yes, it will happen. But for our part, we're simply trying to surrender to the Lord, and that's the solution. We give up our material attachments and everything. We simply try to surrender to the Lord, and that's the solution to all the problems. If we have the Lord, a relationship with the Lord, then all the other things don't matter anymore. So this is the actual solution to all the problems in the material world. As we, Prabhupada has remarked, you know, we try to solve the problems with so many things. Science tries to solve it. Politicians try to solve problems. But problems are unending. We don't solve problems. They tried to make the First World War, then they thought war is bad, so they made the League of Nations. And then that didn't work, and they had war anyway, in spite of the League of Nations. And then they had Second World War, and then they thought war is bad, so they made the United Nations to prevent war. And as soon as that got made, they started fighting wars again. And we had war, the whole history of the last 50 years has been wars everywhere, one war after the other, and the United Nations is standing there doing nothing, can't do anything about it. And with the war, we get more and more nations. Instead of uniting them into one, they become divided into more as a result. The Prabhupada said, what is the use of all this? So political solutions stand up as no solutions ultimately, no matter how good the intentions are. We end up with problems again with all these. So unless we have spiritual purity, then the problems will continue. And if we have spiritual purity, then all these material problems will also disappear. If everyone is spiritual, they won't have material attachments, therefore they won't fight over countries, etc. anymore. They won't have these wars anymore. Economic problems will get solved. Everything gets solved. So this is the actual solution, to dedicate ourselves and understand our spiritual purpose in life. And immediately all the material needs become decreased. They become minimal at that point. And our main need is spiritual need. And that is without material conditions. It doesn't matter where you are, in what country, or how much money you've got, or whatever, or what your material facilities are. You can worship the Lord and establish a relationship with Him. So everyone can be spiritually blissful. And they don't worry about the material things anymore. So this is the final solution to all of our problems. And of course, ultimately, when we leave the body, then we don't take another material body at all. That is the solution. We end up with a spiritual body, which is eternal, blissful, in the spiritual world. That is a real solution. We don't have to come into the material world again. So this verse is very interesting because Kasyapa Muni, he says, you should worship the Lord who is the Purusha, who is Bhagavan, who is Janardana, who is Sarvabhuta Guha Vasa, Vasudev, Jagat Guru. He gives them all these different names. He's a Purusha, Supreme Enjoyer. He's Bhagavata. He is the one who has got all qualities, all perfect qualities. Person with all qualities. He's Janardana, one who is capable of vanquishing all enemies. In other words, he protects the devotee very nicely in all cases. He's Sarvabhuta Guhavasam. He lives in the heart of all living entities. He's a Paramatma. A Vasudeva, son of Vasudev. That means Krishna. Of course, it can also mean Vasa, he who lives in everybody. Or pervades the universe also. And Jagat Guru, he is the guru, or the spiritual master for the entire universe. He is the one that gives guidance. He is the one who knows everything about the universe and gives guidance to all the jivas in the universe for their spiritual benefit. So as Sarva Bhuta Guhavasa, living in the heart of all living entities, he has two functions. One, he tries to fulfill the desires of the living entities if they want to enjoy materially. He does that. And if they have a desire to get out of the material world and serve Krishna, the Lord also does that. And so he allows material enjoyment or spiritual progress. He sits in the heart, witnessing all the activities, etc. And accordingly, he tries to give to the jiva according to his desires. But, of course, ultimately he is trying to elevate us upwards towards spiritual life. So therefore he's actually the guru. It's not that he simply satisfies our material desires, but more important than that, he's always trying to bring us to the spiritual level, and he's always willing to give advice
for the jivas good advice. So therefore, he says, I will give you the intelligence by which you can come to me. He's willing to give us proper guidance in all times. So the Lord is the one who wants to give us good advice, good knowledge, if we want it. And if we want to stay in the material world, he'll also allow that. And he'll give us that enjoyment also. He's our protector. He will protect us from the enemies, from the asuras, in all cases, and help with our spiritual progress. And he's most attractive, full of all wonderful qualities, wonderful form. Bhagavan means he has beauty, all good qualities, all powers. He has inconceivable powers, completely untouched by the material world. All perception, all knowledge, everything. So he's the perfect person, most attractive person because of all these things. The form, qualities, activities are all perfect and full. So he's Bhagavan. And Purusha means he is the enjoyer. He is the ultimate enjoyer of everything. So we have to give the enjoyment to him. So therefore he is the one we should worship. He is the rightful object of worship for everyone. And we do that, and all the problems in the world are finished. No more problems anymore. So any questions? Consciously on one level, we don't know. That doesn't mean it's not there somewhere. Because in our mind, our subtle body, we have all the records there somewhere, you know, in a backlog somewhere. Not accessible now under normal circumstances, are not there. Nevertheless, everything is there. So we can say, why isn't everything there? Why isn't it all evident? But the problem is, if everything is evident for all your previous lifetimes, you probably couldn't live this lifetime. It'd be such a mess. Even this lifetime, we have to edit our experiences also. Yeah? And the bad ones we usually forget, or we you know, block them out. Some of them are so bad, we block them out in this lifetime even. Otherwise, we can't live properly. So there's a function of the mind that blocks them out. And you forget about them because of that. Even though they're still influencing you to some degree in this lifetime, cause little problems now and then. And generally try to forget them. So, otherwise you can't carry on your regular functions. So, if we have so many experiences from so many lifetimes in the past, and they're all going to directly, you know, be in our memory and cause us so much influence, then this life, we can't live this life with this body very well, because we're so much affected by the previous ones. And even in one lifetime, it is very difficult for some people to take all those experiences and live with them. Therefore, they cut some of them out also, even in one lifetime. So, if we can imagine all the other lifetimes together, it would be very difficult to live this lifetime. So therefore, that's the function, is to cut those things out. But then it's a little more difficult in one sense, isn't it? Because we don't remember. It's a learning experience in which we don't know what the cause was in one sense. So it does take a little bit of appreciation or intuition, we can say, to understand that we're the cause of our suffering, not somebody else. So it's a slow process of realizing this, which will take many births also.
I've talked to many people and have rejected karma and reincarnation on that
basis. Just because you don't understand. Well, that's not a good reason. Just because you don't remember doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
I'd like to say, well, what's the point in getting it?
What's the point? Karma? Yeah.
If we can't even associate it to a previous action.
Well, as I said, there are reasons for that. And one of the reasons is we cannot if it's one karma, fine. But I mean, there's a karma going on all day long. And if you have to remember all the previous experiences from all the previous lifetimes connected to that, you go crazy. Because every single act we do has a result. Not, some of the insignificant actions, but nevertheless we get results for them. Walking down the street, stepping on a bug, everything. Accidental actions have a reaction also. So it's not possible for us to keep all these things in our mind all the time. And But the significant ones, of course, that's the heavy karmas, the impact of this lifetime, this gives us a chance to think. Yeah? At least if we can't remember the actual thing, it gives us a chance to think about why is this happening to me. And then we have to investigate higher causes, because we can't always explain in terms of immediate causes. Yeah? And ultimately it comes back to ourself again. Yeah? That we have to. It's a higher principle, of course, and it's difficult to trace out. Well, that's the whole point. We're trying to get off the material level and get to the spiritual level. Yeah. So, and therefore we have to go back for a very subtle cause, which means we have to start becoming spiritual and to realize our condition in the material world. The problem is, if we recognize, okay, this came from that, we'll try another material solution probably. We'll try to make it a material solution again, like tit for tat, and we'll do prasittas instead all the time, just to get rid of the things, you know. To this way we'll just kind of stay in the material world forever. Oh, that was caused by this, therefore I'll do this activity, cancel this activity, and like that. That's what we'll try to do.
Just an observation. You know, trying to discuss these kind of points with people sometimes isn't a point in it, because the idea of learning still has them in control. Like, how many control the storm can we learn? But actually, what you learn is you give control to someone else. You understand what you actually want to call. Under someone else's control.
Well, like, if we already think we know, then we're not going to learn anything from anybody else, isn't it? One has to surrender, in other words, or whatever, be submissive to get the knowledge properly. Everything is a difficulty in learning. You know, everything is difficult to learn and accept. Otherwise, everyone would know everything immediately. So, karma is like that also. Maybe difficult for some people to accept that. Yeah? And it'll take a lot of experience maybe for them to accept it eventually.
It's interesting that for a theist who doesn't believe in karma and reincarnation, they become a problem, because they can't explain how God can be all powerful and all good and yet
do bad things to us.
Living in theism is the cause of his own suffering. It's just inheriting the world for some other weird reason.
Well, I think ultimately, if something bad happens to you, then Christianity will have to explain in terms of something you did, but they have to attribute it to this lifetime. But then if they can't do it, that's the problem. That's very difficult to explain that, you know, why the child suffers. And then there's no answer to that one. So it's very difficult. I think they wrote a book about that. Why do good people suffer or something? Why do bad things happen to good people? Somebody's so nice and he's religious and everything, and he's suffering in the material world. He dies suddenly. So then, why? And God cannot explain. So therefore, the result is they conclude maybe there is no God, or God is not perfect. Huh? They have all sorts of funny solutions they give to this problem. Even as priests and Christians, you know, they give all these solutions that maybe God isn't perfect, God doesn't know everything, God can't help it.
The oldest person, so he's
gone
a little
senile. No, I see. Not very attentive anymore. So it's very difficult for them to explain that.
I think in the previous ages, many occasions, sages were able to reveal for a particular persons the causes of their suffering. They could directly say, you were covered, cursed, you did this, you know, they had this power. Therefore, this problem could be easily solved those times. You just approach the problem in a person, and they could say, you're able to say, because of this disease, in that life.
Nowadays, we don't know. But of course, even now through hypnosis, they attempt to do that to some degree. Yeah? and some degree successful when you have a particular problem which cannot be traced out in this lifetime. Sometimes they can trace it back to something in the previous lifetime, and when they understand that, and then they actually get the problem solved sometimes, you know. The karmas get solved out somehow or other by that. You know, there may be little karmas or whatever, somehow they dissolve due to the experience of them again, the recollection, and then the resolution of the emotions. Somehow they get out of it that way. So possible in some cases, but some cases it may not be advisable to remember those things either, and therefore you won't remember them even under hypnosis. Even if it's there, you may not remember them because it may not be beneficial for you at this time, so therefore you won't remember them. And sometimes people may spontaneously remember something in the previous lifetime now, because it may be beneficial for them also. It may help them in working out the karma in this lifetime. So in that case, it may be available for them. But in many cases, it's not beneficial, so therefore it's just blocked out.
In Russia, there were one very popular doctor whose extra senses were on Lazarev, you know. And he has this ability to go in the past, his patients in search for the cause. And when he explains them some method, he gets somehow, you know, good results. It's very popular now. Although he tried to deny connection of his understanding of karma is Vedic. But in other words, he is very successful. Basically the same thing. He goes to the course in the previous life. And he wrote many books in this life. Four, five, six books, and he just explains that was the situation. And he was so deep with this, and how he was trying to do with this, and what was it, and very impressive.
I saw a very strange thing on television once. There were groups of people, and they were doing this like hypnotherapy regression thing. And they were saying that all the problems in life are caused by the trauma we went through at birth. And so they were making these people regress, like, and relive this memory of their
birth.
I had them all like in between mattresses on the stage, and they're making these funny noises like as though they were children again. And then after some time, they'll be groaning, and like they'll be dipping around. Yes, come on, you can do it. And then they come out in between the two mattresses and
get reborn.
And they wake up and they're still more fulfilled and born again.
Well, they do say that your first 6 months of your life normally determine your whole life, in the sense of how you react to the world. Because you're so sensitive at that time, and how you get treated and how you think of the world is imprinted there. You know, when children are young, the brains are very soft and everything, so all the impressions come in very, very quickly and get stuck there. Like everything gets recorded. So your first reactions to the world are actually the ones that kind of drive you the rest of your life. So therefore, if you have, you know, a bad birth and a bad upbringing, it's very difficult to get out of those, you know, influences later on. Those impressions, they stick with you. So in that sense, true. But of course, those aren't the only ones. It's previous life. All those ones are all added there, and they're all contributing as well.
I have a question about Kashyapa Muni. From the third counter, you know that Kashyapa couldn't resist. Did his request for the progeny. And it was explained that he couldn't resist because he was impersonalist.
Here he's a personalist.
He uses all instructions and his identity as a person, as an entity. Whereas in Aditi's case, in Aditi, he couldn't resist any second of his desires because
he wasn't on the highest level. Well, perhaps he evolved later on through experience, and he changed. You know. How else? I don't know. The idea there, of course, is that if one is in a relationship with the Supreme Lord and is perfect, then he would not fall from his position. Whereas one who is either still in the material world or up to the level of Brahman or impersonal, it's possible he can fall. Huh? But one who's on the highest level, like Haridas Thakur or something like that, then there's no possibility of falling. So, or getting tempted in that way. So, maybe that's the rationale there. So, here he's talking about Supreme Lord and everything. Maybe he got some more experience after that. Okay. Hare Krishna.